Speaking today with Joel Redmond, who is the Democratic candidate for state representative in District 144 over in Pasadena. Joel, first question I'd like to ask people is, why are you running for this office?
Well, Charles, for the last 14 years, I've lived and worked in Southeast Harris County. And over that time, I've had a mortgage company there and been able to help some 2,500 families as they purchased a home. And that gave me the opportunity to deal with just a cross-section of people and to talk to a vast cross-section of people and see what's important to them, the issues that they face in their families each day. And then about 2 years ago, I founded a ministry that works in prisons throughout Southeast Texas and working with offenders that are incarcerated and working with their families that are on the outside seeing the issues that they face. Those two issues combined, when I just saw that there's a lot of issues that a lot of people face that frankly, of recent years anyway, the Texas legislature has just not been very attuned to, I felt like the thing for me to do was to run for this position and to try to help the people of District 144 as best I could.
Now, I think most people don't really think of that area as being traditionally Democratic turf, and indeed, the outgoing representative, Robert Talton, represented that area for a long time. Most years he didn't really get a challenger. What are you seeing? Is that area as we think of it, or is it changing? And then what kind of response are you getting?
You know, that area is changing rapidly. I have been very excited about the response that we're receiving from our field program. There's somewhere in the vicinity of 40,000 registered households in the district. Through the end of this week, by Labor Day, we will have covered approximately half of that, approximately 20,000 houses. Now, of course, you can't ever find a time where everyone's at home, but we've been out every evening and every Saturday visiting with people from all areas, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, and just talking about what's important to them. And we have been received just in a fabulous way. We could not be more excited about the reception that we've received within the district. And we look forward to the next 6-8 weeks, whatever that time frame is, until the election is here. We've got a lot more work left to do. There's a lot that's been done, but we have a lot of work left to do. And we feel good about the possibilities for November 4th.
Now, one of the things that came up in that district last year was, the speaker's race, because Representative Talton wound up presenting himself as quite a thorn in the side to House Speaker Tom Craddock. Your opponent would be a supporter of Speaker Craddock's. Does that issue come up at all in the district when you talk to people? Are people aware of that?
People are not nearly as aware of that as I would have thought they were. There are some that are, but most people that we talk to are not as aware of that issue. I think a lot of people we talk to are aware that the state seems to be headed in the wrong direction on lots of issues. As we're able to visit with more and more people and explain the direction that the leadership has provided on a lot of issues, I think they become more aware of that. But to answer your question, less than I would have thought that we have talked to or aware of the speaker's situation there in Austin.
Okay. Now, you say you're a mortgage broker. Obviously, there's a kind of a bad situation in the mortgage industry these days. A lot of people having issues with foreclosure.
Yes.
What, if anything, can the state legislature do to help people out with that? And what would you like to see the state legislature do if you're elected?
You know, that's a very good question. And there is a foreclosure crisis that's very real to a lot of people within the district. And as we're out talking to people every day, there's people that just can't afford to make their mortgage. And, the main thing that the state needs to address is to make sure that loans are only made that are prudent loans, and to have some accountability for the investors and even to a certain extent to the originators of these loans, to make sure that loans are not originated and closed that are set up for failure. Because under many of the moral acts and imprudent guidelines from 2 years ago, many people just bought houses where A, they did not fully understand the loans that they were signing on, and B, they bought houses that they just simply couldn't afford. And so I think the state has to do a much better job in regulating to make sure that loans originated within the state of Texas are not set up to fail, that they're prudent and that they make sense for all parties.
Okay. And public education is always an issue in Texas. Not too long ago, the legislature attempted to address some of that. What they wound up doing was really addressing a court ruling on property taxes, and they created a new business tax that is supposed to address some of the shortfall in income with property taxes being cut. A lot of people aren't very happy with the business tax. What's your take on it? What would you like to see the legislature do about it?
Well, we just paid our margins tax, actually, so I am pretty familiar with it. The margins tax simply has not worked. There was too many exclusions. From our standpoint, being a small business owner, I have no objection to paying what is our fair share of taxes. But there was too many exclusions to too many corporations, and the margins tax, quite frankly, has just been a failure. And there were, from a school finance standpoint, there were many other proposals that made a lot more sense. So at the very least, the margins tax has to be relooked to see about eliminating some of the exclusions, or many of the exclusions that are in there currently, if not just scrapped altogether, and find a better way of fairly assessing taxes.
Okay. Higher education has also been an issue lately. Since 2003, when the legislature passed the law deregulating tuition for public universities in Texas, tuition has gone up considerably, and a lot of people aren't very happy with that. There's been some calls to re-regulate. What's your take on that?
Tuition costs have just skyrocketed since deregulation, and the working many of the working families in District 144 simply cannot afford to send their kids to public institutions, and I just think that's a sad situation. So deregulation has not worked. At the very least, it should be relooked at. But not only for four-year universities, but for community colleges. I mean, community colleges have suffered due to a lot of reasons in recent years. And Santa Ana College is certainly a viable part of the district where I am, and equips a large part of the workforce in and around District 144. So higher education is certainly an issue. The deregulation of the universities and the tuitions has certainly been a failure and needs to be relooked at and addressed.
Another thing that happened in 2003 was the state tightened access requirements for the Children's Health Insurance Program, CHIP, resulting in a lot of people being taken off the rolls. Last session, that was relaxed somewhat, and some of those were restored, but it's still below levels that it had been in previously. What would you like to see the state do regarding CHIP?
CHIP should be made as simple as it can be made for every child to be able to have access to health care. CHIP should be, A, fully funded because of the federal matching. We're just leaving money on the table. And that's part of the problem. The other part of the problem is the complexity associated with enrolling, et cetera, with the CHIP program. So it should be simplified greatly, and we should fully fund CHIP in order to take part in that federal match, because not doing so has a tremendous effect, for instance, on the Harris County Hospital District, and there's just many other far-reaching effects and cost, not to mention the fact that creating impediments to enroll kids to have insurance is just morally wrong. Outside of any of the financial factors and the cost that we pay in the end, we have a responsibility to our children to make sure that that is readily accessible to them.
You had mentioned earlier that you founded a ministry that does outreach to people who are incarcerated. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, we have a ministry that works in the prisons. We do many different things in the prison, from addiction recovery to one-on-one mentoring to weekly services, which I take part in many times. We have a radio program that goes into 33 prisons each week. There's many things that are done in the prison, and it's a Christian-based ministry that was founded. But you know, the goal is to provide and equip inmates with the opportunity to become responsible, contributing members of society once they have served their sentence. And to try and just do our small part to break the cycle of generation after generation after generation of within a family that is incarcerated. You know, when we're out, I'm out oftentimes on Sundays and a lot of times on Saturdays, and when you see these 4 and 5 year old children each and every week coming to visit their mother and their father in prison, it just does something to you. And you know, whatever part we can play to try and help break that cycle. And we do lots of work with the families of those who are incarcerated to, again, try to not make that so much of a generational issue.
Now, it seems usually when the legislature addresses matters of crime and punishment, incarceration, you know, usually the reaction is, you know, make something illegal, make it a felony, increase sentences, lock them up, build more prisons. You have kind of a different perspective on this, since you see things on the inside, work with inmates. What should the legislature be doing to, you know, help imprison fewer people and help those who are in not go back once they get out?
Well, that's a complex question. I'll hit just a couple of the highlights. It's been my experience, and certainly there are those with more experience working with offenders than I have, but it's been my experience that the vast, vast, vast majority of people that end up in prison are there due to drug-related matters. Either the crime they committed was while they were under the influence of a drug. So to try to get to the root of that issue and to stop the readily accessible flow of drugs from many different areas, including across the borders, is just a real issue. And addiction, you know, the addiction recovery work that we do in the prisons, that seems to be the number one need, if I could address a singular need, is to break the chain of addiction, substance abuse that the offenders have.
So should there be more options funded by the state to deal with the rehabilitation, to offer treatment instead of incarceration? What do you think about that?
I think yes. To answer your question, there should be more options there, and we pay a great price financially and otherwise, because when people are put in prison and they're released, the system is somewhat set up to fail. I'm certainly not against people not. If people commit crimes, there's consequences for doing that. And that's one of the things that we talk about each and every time we're in a prison, that we all have consequences to our decisions. But more should be spent on equipping and training people to have a chance to become responsible members of society upon their release.
Okay. Recently, Karl Rove was in town raising money for a number of Republican candidates for state house, including your opponent. Got any comment on that?
I found that to be quite interesting. I read that in the paper, probably as you did, and my comment is, I would have, faced with the same situation, I would have opted to not take part in that, nor would I have personally wanted any money that was raised from that.
Okay. When people go to the polls in November in District 144 and they come to your race, how do you want them to think about it?
You know, I would just encourage when people come to the polls, there's really one distinction that I would ask that people consider. One option is to vote as the leadership in Austin mandates and vote what's best for those currently in power there. And our message really is a message of helping people and to try and just do what's right by the people of District 144. We certainly won't all always agree on every issue, but there's a fundamental difference between signing on with the current leadership in Austin as opposed to trying to do what's best for the hardworking people of District 144. And I would just ask that the people, when they go to the polls, give that some consideration and just know that my aim is to help the folks of District 144 and to represent them as fairly as possible, irrespective of what may be popular in Austin at times. I know that they are the folks that will elect me and they are the folks that will send me back. So that is where my accountability lies, is to the voters of District 144.
Joel Redmond, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you, sir.